In our last lecture, we traced the transformation of American Orthodoxy from the late 19th century through the post-war era. We saw that early American Orthodoxy operated in a fluid religious environment without sharply defined denominational boundaries. Orthodox rabbis often prioritized maintaining Jewish affiliation and communal continuity over strict enforcement, serving communities that were socially mobile, religiously diverse, and only partially observant. At the same time, this distinction between Orthodoxy and conservative Judaism remained unclear for decades. Institutions such as JTS originally saw themselves not as a break from Orthodoxy, but as part of a broad coalition committed to preserving traditional Judaism in America while adapting to modern conditions. Over time, however, as conservative Judaism developed its own institutions, theology, and halachic authority, especially through issues such as mixed seating, aguna proposal, and the permissibility of driving to synagogue on Shabbos, Orthodoxy increasingly responded by clarifying its own standards and boundaries. Figures such as Rav Soloveitchik played a central role in rebuilding Orthodox confidence and identity, helping shift the modern Orthodox rabbinate away from a model centered primarily on accommodation and affiliation towards one increasingly focused on institutional strength, halachic commitment, and boundary formation. Today, we continue this story by exploring how post-war modern Orthodoxy began constructing a more self-conscious ideological identity in response to both the rise of conservative Judaism and the challenges of modern American culture through debates over halachic authority, denominational boundaries, intellectual openness, and the competing visions of figures such as Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Lichtenstein, and Rabbi Yitz Greenberg for what modern Orthodoxy should become. Post-war decades were among the most transformative periods in the history of American Orthodoxy. Before World War II, many sociologists predicted that Orthodoxy in America would disappear. The immigrant Orthodox community often appeared weak, socially marginal, and institutionally fragile. Yet by the 1960s and 1970s, Orthodoxy was not merely surviving, it was rebuilding itself with extraordinary confidence. But it was at this time that American Orthodoxy began to address profound questions. How should Orthodox Jews relate to modern American culture? What boundaries separate Orthodoxy from conservative informed Judaism? Can Orthodoxy engage biblical scholarship without surrendering theological commitments? Who are the leading intellectuals of the modern Orthodox world, the rabbis or the scholars? These questions produced fierce debates that shaped the future of Orthodoxy in America. The post-war era witnessed the rise of powerful Rosh Yeshiva, the emergence of modern Orthodox intellectuals, the sharpening of denominational boundaries, and ultimately a significant rightward shift within modern Orthodoxy itself. As mentioned in my last lecture and in the introduction here, as conservative Judaism became more ideologically defined, Orthodoxy was forced to define itself more sharply in response. Boundary formation became central. Modern Orthodoxy had to explain why it differed from conservative Judaism. What kinds of adaptation were legitimate? Which changes crossed theological red lines? The result was not merely a theological clarification, but a restructuring of rabbinic authority itself. In this context, two major halakhic controversies reveal the tensions of this era. One defining issue was mixed seating in synagogues. Many American synagogues had introduced family seating in response to changing American social norms. The question was whether Orthodoxy could tolerate this adaptation. As mentioned in my last lecture, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik eventually took a firm stand against mixed seating and mechitzales synagogues. His position became foundational for modern Orthodox institutional identity. What is significant is not merely the halakhic ruling itself, but the sociological function of the ruling. The mechitza became a boundary marker. It distinguished Orthodoxy from conservative Judaism. At nearly the same time, the conservative movement issued its famous responsum permitting driving to synagogue on Shabbos under limited conditions. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein sharply opposed not only the ruling itself, but even encouraging attendance when it would involve driving. In a 1953 tshuva written to a rabbi in Detroit, Rabbi Moshe ruled that inviting Jews who live far from synagogue to attend services on Shabbos when they would inevitably drive constitute a violation of Lifnei Iver, placing a stumbling block before the blind, because the invitation facilitated a serious Torah prohibition. And he went even further, arguing that such encouragement could fall under the category of mesis, actively inducing another person to sin. Drawing on the Gemara's description of the serpent, of the Nachash in Bereishis, as a mesis, Moshe portrayed religious accommodation that enabled public Shabbos violation not merely as a mistaken policy, but as a grave spiritual offense. These controversies helped crystallize the post-war Orthodox self-understanding. Orthodoxy would adapt socially and culturally in some areas, but not through formal halakhic restructuring that resembled conservative methodology. To understand why Rashi Yeshiva became so central during this period, we must turn to Professor Chaim Soloveitchik's landmark essay, Rupture and Reconstruction. In this article, Rabbi Soloveitchik argues that pre-war Orthodoxy was largely mimetic. People learned Judaism by living inside traditional communities, observing parents, absorbing communal norms, participating in inherited religious culture. Religious authority was decentralized. One learned Judaism less from texts and more from life itself. However, the Holocaust, immigration, suburbanization, and Americanization shattered this world, what Professor Soloveitchik calls rupture. Traditional communities disappeared. The mimetic chain broke. As a result, Orthodoxy increasingly became text-based rather than culture-based. Authority shifted from local custom to books, from communal practice to halakhic analysis, from rabbis embedded in communities to elite Rosh Yeshiva. This partially explains the extraordinary rise of figures like Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Aaron Cutler, Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rosh Yeshiva of MTJ. The Rosh Yeshiva became not merely a teacher of Talmud, but the architect of Orthodox identity itself. The sociologist Charles Liebman offered one of the most influential frameworks for understanding post-war Orthodoxy. He distinguished between church orthodoxy and sectarian orthodoxy. Church orthodoxy, associated with Yeshiva University, the RCA, and Rav Soloveitchik, what we call the modern Orthodox community. Church orthodoxy is a religion that has made peace with the surrounding social order. Church orthodoxy believed that orthodoxy could participate in American society, engage secular culture, interact with broader culture while remaining committed to halacha. Sectarian orthodoxy associated with Lakewood, Irvine Cutler, and the Aguda, what we call the yeshivish community. Sectarian orthodoxy emphasized insulation, social separation, strong boundaries, and suspicion of secular culture. The goal was not synthesis, but preservation. A dramatic example of these two post-war models occurred in 1956. The issue was, should Orthodox rabbis participate in organizations together with conservative and reform rabbis, specifically the Synagogue Council of America and the New York Board of Rabbis? Rav Aaron Cutler organized a group of 11 Rosh Yeshiva who issued a ban prohibiting participation. The signatories included major Rosh Yeshiva of Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Yitzchak Huttner, Rav Gedaliah Shor, and others. The statement declared, it is forbidden by the law of our sacred Torah to participate with them either as an individual or as an organized communal body. Professor Mark Shapiro called this perhaps the first major example of Das Torah in America, meaning do as I say because of my authority. These were Rosh Yeshiva, not congregational rabbis. This demonstrates the shift of authority from pulpit rabbis to elite Torah scholars. However, Rav Soloveitchik refused to sign. Instead, he later articulated his position in his famous essay, Confrontation. Soloveitchik argued cooperation on practical matters like anti-Semitism or social welfare was legitimate, but theological collaboration was not. Here we see that boundary formation was occurring, but even within Orthodoxy, there was disagreement about how boundaries should be constructed. By the 1960s, a new generation emerged within Yeshiva University. These figures were not merely rabbis. They were academics, public intellectuals, and scholars deeply immersed in both Torah and modern thought. This was the golden age of the Orthodox Intellectual Project. Rabbi Norman Lam founded the journal Tradition in 1958. Tradition became the flagship intellectual journal of modern Orthodoxy. It aimed to cultivate sophisticated Orthodox engagement with philosophy, politics, ethics, modern scholarship, and contemporary social questions. This was an attempt to create not merely observant Jews, but Orthodox intellectual culture. At the same time, leading academic figures graced the halls of Yeshiva University. Charles Liebman, Rabbi Emanuel Rachman, Rabbi Yitz Greenberg, and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. These thinkers represented different visions of Orthodoxy's engagement with modernity. In 1963, Charles Liebman was appointed assistant professor of Political Science at YU. A few years later, he authored a lengthy essay on Orthodoxy in American Jewish Life, a landmark work that put Orthodox Judaism on the scholarly map as a living, dynamic movement. He was very interested in how Jewish learning informed contemporary issues. Rabbi Emanuel Rachman was past president of the RCA, senior advisor at Yeshiva University, and rabbi of Shaarei Tefillah in Long Island. He favored cooperation with non-Orthodox Jews, public moral activism, and a willingness to revitalize halacha for modern times. He wrote an article about modernizing Shabbos, using language that seemed to make halacha sound more flexible than traditionally understood, and that article received substantial pushback. The left-wing Orthodox camp included Rabbi Yitz Greenberg. Who was Rabbi Greenberg? He was born in 1933, attended BTA, did undergraduate work at Brooklyn College, and received smicha from Yeshivas Beis Yosef in Brooklyn, Navardic, in 1953. He joined YU's history faculty in 1959. At this stage, the left-wing Orthodox camp was well within the modern Orthodox tent. In fact, both Rabbi Yitz Greenberg and Charles Lieben presented at the 1965 RCA convention addressing topics such as women's leadership and dialogue with the non-Orthodox. However, the Jewish intellectual controversy erupted in April 1966 when Rabbi Yitz Greenberg gave an interview to the YU newspaper, The Commentator, on Orthodoxy, YU, Vietnam, and Sex. Published on April 28th, this interview addressed Orthodoxy, biblical criticism, denominational relations, Vietnam, sexuality, and contemporary moral issues. Rabbi Yitz Greenberg argued that Orthodoxy refuses to come out of the East European ghetto and described Orthodox withdrawal from broader society as a form of cowardice. He said that Orthodoxy has lost all connection with modern life. He called for a thorough re-examination of the Shulchan Aruch, because halacha has broken down. He advocated greater openness to biblical criticism and charged that Orthodox rabbinic leaders were failing to update and fully apply halacha to modern realities. He also argued that rabbinic authority should recognize that there is nothing wrong with sex per se, and develop a new value system and a corresponding halachic framework regarding sexuality, though he did not clearly specify what practical changes he envisioned. More broadly, he called for a reevaluation of halacha, deeper engagement with contemporary moral issues, and greater cooperation with non-Jews. Why did the interview provoke such an explosion? Partly because of its substance, but equally because of its tone. Rabbi Greenberg spoke in a provocative and confrontational manner, implying that Orthodoxy lacked both moral courage and intellectual honesty. Many readers felt that he approached sacred matters with reckless abandon and in a style that violated accepted communal norms. The controversy was therefore not merely about what he said, but how he said it. Rabbi Greenberg himself appears to have been surprised by the intensity of the Orthodox reaction. On May 12th, he published a lengthy letter to the editor responding to the furor generated by the interview. In the June 2nd, 1966 issue of The Commentator, Avraham Lichtenstein responded with a lengthy open letter. Who was Avraham Lichtenstein? Avraham Lichtenstein had many scholarly interests, but he was most comfortable in the Beis Medrash. He studied at Yeshivas Chaim Berlin under Rav Huttner and Avraham Soloveitchik before attending YU. He graduated from YU and studied with the Rav Soloveitchik. After graduating from YU, he went to Harvard, where he received a PhD in literature, and then returned to YU in 1957 to serve as the Rav's assistant and teach English literature at Stern College at the age of 25. He also married the Rav's daughter. He started teaching English at Yeshiva College in 1962. Rav Lichtenstein felt that he had to respond to Rabbi Yitz Greenberg's letter because silence, or his interview, because silence might imply that he agreed with his views. This response is extraordinarily important because it began to reveal some of the disagreement within modern Orthodoxy itself. Rav Lichtenstein agreed that Orthodoxy must address modern issues, develop a Torah worldview, and confront moral intellectual challenges. He did not reject engagement with modernity. What did he object to? He believed that Rabbi Greenberg exaggerated Orthodoxy's failures, blurred theological boundaries, and irresponsibly handled sensitive issues. He asserts that that Orthodox should and do apply halacha to modern issues, and indicate that Rabbi Yitz Greenberg thinks that we should use a more liberal-minded approach to push halacha. He thinks Torah and halacha should be the focus. through which we should analyze American values. Again, this is coming from an individual who's steeped in Western values, a PhD in literature from Harvard. And sexuality, Rav Lichtenstein feared that Rabbi Greenberg gave the impression that Orthodoxy might sanction premarital sexual permissiveness. Many sources seem positive about sex, many halachic sources seem positive about sex, so Chazal are generally positive. Medieval sources seem to focus more on asceticism, less positive, but modern poskim seem more positive. On denominational relationships, he insisted that appreciation for non-Orthodox Jews could not become theological legitimization. He suggested that Rabbi Yitzchak Greenberg hinted on theological legitimization in his paper. Historian Adam Furziger notes that several ideas associated with Rabbi Yitzchak Greenberg eventually entered mainstream modern Orthodoxy in modified form. Rabbi Yitzchak Greenberg advocated greater openness to biblical scholarship. At the time, this was deeply controversial. Yet later developments at institutions like Herzog College normalized sophisticated literary and historical Bible study within Orthodox settings. Figures such as Rabbi Mordechai Breuer and Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun developed advanced Orthodox approaches to Tanakh that incorporated historical and literary sensitivity. Rabbi Yitzchak Greenberg's openness towards non-Orthodox Jews also foreshadowed later developments. Rav Lichtenstein himself later rejected triumphalism and spoke appreciatively about sincere non-Orthodox Jews. At the same time, Rav Yitzchak Greenberg's later trajectory moved significantly farther left. His Holocaust theology eventually produced the concept of voluntary covenant, that after Auschwitz, Jewish covenantal commitment could no longer be understood primarily in coercive or obligatory terms. He also developed increasingly pluralistic views towards non-Orthodox theology and practice. This raises an important historical question. Were these positions already latent in 1966, or did they develop later? Certainly one can detect inklings of later pluralism in the original commentator interview. But it is also possible that Rabbi Greenberg evolved substantially over time. It seems to me that Rav Lichtenstein may have sensed what Rabbi Greenberg was doing and perhaps with an eye towards gradual revolution. First, raising a series of sharp, provocative concerns in broad terms without clearly stating anything that is explicitly halachically transgressive, and using that as a way to slowly shift the status quo over time, whether in relation to non-Orthodox Judaism, halachic interpretation, more broadly biblical criticism, or sexual ethics. I think Rav Lichtenstein picked up on that dynamic and pushed back not only on the substance but also on the tone. Even if the language did not initially appear fully radical or explicit, he tried to show why it could nevertheless function as a vehicle for deeper change and why that required careful critique. The aftermath of the controversy is historically revealing. One by one, the major intellectual figures who had sought to root Orthodox Jewish intellectual life in the academy rather than the rabbinate moved away from the center of American modern Orthodoxy. In 1969, Professor Charles Liebman made Aliyah, joined Bar Ilan, and gradually distanced himself from the Orthodox community. In 1971, Rav Lichtenstein made Aliyah to become co-Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva at Har Etzion. Rabbi Yitzchak Greenberg, especially after his public clash with Rav Lichtenstein, was increasingly pushed to the margins of Yeshiva College. In 1968, he lowered his teaching load and campus profile considerably. And in 1972, he left to found the Jewish Studies Center at City College in New York. Over time, Rabbi Greenberg's trajectory would take him to the outer edge of Orthodoxy. The center of intellectual authority increasingly shifted back towards the rabbinate and towards Rabbi Norman Lamb and his journal tradition. The only major figure still positioned within Yeshiva University's leadership orbit was Rabbi Emanuel Rachman. Yet in 1975, after Rabbi Rachman proposed a controversial solution to the Aguna problem, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik publicly opposed this position. That opposition effectively made clear that Rabbi Rachman would not succeed Dr. Samuel Belkin as president of Yeshiva University. Instead, Rabbi Lamb was selected. The decision symbolized a major shift. Modern Orthodoxy did not move in a more progressive direction during this period. Rather, leadership and intellectual authority consolidated within the more traditionalist wing of modern Orthodoxy. The movement would continue to engage modernity, but increasingly under rabbinic rather than academic control. In 1977, Rabbi Rachman himself left for Israel, where he reunited with Liebman and later served as president of Bar-Ilan University. The attempt of the 1960s to relocate Orthodox intellectual authority from the rabbinate to the academy had ultimately failed. Historian Zev Elef argues that mono-Orthodoxy's later trajectory reflected broader American religious trends. The 1970s witnessed the rise of evangelical conservatism in America. Across religions, liberal religious movements weakened, conservative identity strengthened, and boundaries hardened. Mono-Orthodoxy followed similar patterns. The more liberal experimental vision associated with Rabbi Yitz Greenberg lost influence. A more traditionalist Mono-Orthodoxy emerged. The shift was not absolute. Mono-Orthodoxy remained distinct from Haredi Orthodoxy, but the center of gravity moved rightward. Stronger halachic boundaries, greater emphasis on yeshiva learning, increased authority of Rashi Yeshiva, and greater suspicion towards theological experimentation. In conclusion, the post-war period created mono-orthodoxy as we know it. Its enduring tensions were forged during these decades: engagement versus separation, intellectual openness versus theological boundary maintenance, rabbinic authority as academic inquiry, adaptation versus continuity. Soloveitchik gave mono-orthodoxy intellectual dignity and halachic confidence, but the movement continually struggled with a difficult question. Can a sophisticated synthesis between Torah and modernity remain stable among an entire community, or is it achievable only for exceptional elites? The Greenberg-Lichtenstein debate revealed that this question had no easy answer. Modern Orthodoxy never fully rejected Rav Yitz Greenberg's challenges, nor did it fully embrace them. Instead, the movement evolved through partial adaptation, selective boundary maintenance, and ongoing negotiation. And perhaps that very instability, the constant renegotiation between openness and fidelity, is itself one of the defining characteristics of modern Orthodoxy.